holy hell.
It's been a while.
It has been a while.
Let's just start this up and move right on into this.
The last movie
let's
was...
make sure
I'm choking.
You don't die first.
I'm choking, but we have to go on through the choking.
The show must go on.
Yeah. Last time we recorded, it was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Holy shit. That was a minute ago.
Yeah.
That was a hot minute ago.
So it was a long time ago.
Wow.
It was before Archon, which was...
Yeah. All right.
So I wrecked my car.
Hey, this is Tony.
This is Kayla.
We are the Backseat Producers.
We are the Backseat Producers.
It's just the two of us tonight.
Yeah.
All those other suckers couldn't hang.
They can't hang.
All right. So 2 days ago, mm-hmm. I give you a ride to go pick up your new car.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I ask you, so what happened? And you said, no. We're going to save this story for the podcast.
Because it's like,
all right,
this is what happened.
So what happened?
I woke up this morning. It was the 11th. Of November.
Now today, as we record, it is the 20th
of
November.
So this is fresh-ish.
So you told me that this happened on Monday,
mm-hmm.
the 11th. Now, you told me this on the 18th, so a week later.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, oh, there was a snowstorm that day.
Yeah.
There was ice on the road. There was sleet. There was snow that started
it was the first
like mid-afternoon.
Weather we've had.
Yeah, and that started like mid-afternoon.
I can tell you precisely when it started.
When did it start?
It started sleeting, I should say, at around 9 p.m. because...
9 p.m.?
A.m., excuse me. Because that was when I was sitting in my car, which was wrecked, on the side of Gravois, freezing my ass off.
So the accident happened before the weather?
Yes.
Okay.
The accident has nothing to do with inclement weather at all. Nothing at all.
All right.
All right. So this is how I start the day, and it's all reports were like, it's going to be hella cold today. We're going to get snow. I was not excited. I was not happy.
Yeah, it wasn't looking good.
And I get ready for work. I'm running out the door, and I think it's raining like a little bit. And I'm like, ooh, it's supposed to get like... really gross and it's cold. I don't want to be like cold and wet. So I went back into my apartment to grab my umbrella. And as I was doing that, I always, whenever something like that happens, when there's like a glitch, like in my morning routine,
mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, what is this either saving me from or putting me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, if
this is a correction in the universe, something's pushing you.
Yeah. Or the opposite of a correction, which... So, I get in my car, and I'm driving to work.
So, are you saying this is karma?
So, I'm driving to work, and the first part of my commute happens on Gravois Road.
Mm-hmm.
I pull up to the intersection of Gravois and Grand.
Sure.
And a truck pulls up along the lane beside me. A big, black pickup truck. And we start to go. The light turns green. We start to go. The truck veers into my lane by quite a lot. And I think, I don't like the cut of this person's jib.
Sure.
So I slow down. Like, for whatever reason, I was just like, I'm not about it today. I'm not, like, going to be an offensive driver. Like, you want to swerve around the road? We're just going to give you some space to
sure.
do that. So I had, like, slowed down a little bit, and I'm just chilling. We're going down Gravois. I am in the rightmost lane. Because eventually I want to make a right turn on Gravois onto Chippewa. And if anybody's familiar with that, like, that's how you do it. The lane, it becomes a right turn only. Lane,
yeah.
Basically.
Right.
So we're in the final stretch. I can see Chippewa. And it's like this long sort of downhill, like long stretch of road.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody up ahead is making a left turn. So they are in the left lane,
mm-hmm.
Which means they're stopped, as cars are wont to do.
Sure.
When and there's like two or three cars kind of like piling up behind them waiting for this person to make a left turn because it's not a part of the road where you can easily get around because very soon it's either go straight or make a right turn.
Sure.
I look up and I'm approaching this slowdown and I see the black truck.
Uh-oh.
The black truck decides that they don't want to slow down even a little bit. So they go to change lanes. Mm. It just so happens to be that I am existing in this lane in the space and time that they want to be in this lane.
Mm.
The truck bodies me.
Yeah.
And in this moment, it's like, it was one of those moments where I'm like watching this happen. And it's like, there's no way they're going to actually hit me because that it would be absurd. There's no reason for it, like, at yeah. all.
Yeah.
The truck bodies me, pushes my tiny little Cobalt completely to the side of the road. So I'm like, I don't even know. I hit a boat parked on the side of the road.
Boat?
Yes.
Holy shit. Wow.
It completely annihilates my front right section.
Like the passenger side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not, it's not like completely annihilated. Like whoever, if somebody had been sitting in there, they wouldn't have gotten hurt. But it like, the boat is up on a hitch trailer. Mm-hmm. I like go up on it and like, it's fucked up.
Oh, wow.
The truck decides that it's none of his business.
Oh, shit.
And he pieces out. He just,
yeah.
And magically, he suddenly needs to make a right turn as well now. So he's gone.
Yeah.
The dude comes out. I'm just sitting in my car like, oh my God, what just happened? And I get out. These guys are coming out. And one of them is the owner of the boat.
Well, sure.
And he's just like, and I was like, I am so, like, I'm freaking out. I'm like, I'm so sorry. This dude just hit me. Like, I had no control over it whatsoever. Blah, 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 blah. And I'm talking to this guy. He calls the police. I call the police. We're sitting there. It's freezing. It yeah. starts to rain harder.
Yeah, because the temperature dropped quickly that morning yeah. or so.
It was freezing. And the dude was like, apparently he was bringing this boat. There are like all these businesses along the side of the road.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's like an auto repair shop over here. And then on the side of the road we're on, there's, I think it's like some detailing. Like,
oh, okay.
I don't know what yeah. they do really. But he was like, I was just about to pull this boat in. Like he had like parked on the side of the road. And because like parking is really cramped and weird in there, he went in to do whatever business. And then they were going to pull it in. He was like, he was coming out to pull this boat in.
Oh no.
And, yeah, so that's pretty much the story.
Wow.
This truck hit me so, like, I thought he kind of tapped my nose and, like, mm-hmm. sent me spinning, but it was all along the side. Like, mm-hmm. my mirror was completely pushed forward, my side mirror, mm-hmm. and there was, like, black scuffs all along the side of it.
Wow. Well, I mean, it's good that he hit you with enough force to leave the scuffs all along the side of yeah. everything. Because it's like, there's no doubt what happened.
Yeah, I took pictures of everything. Like, I was especially appreciative that the mirrors, because, like, it's so obvious.
Right.
And the dude was like, he didn't see the collision, but he's like, I heard an initial impact and then a second one, and I saw the truck take off. So he told the police that at least.
That's good.
Yeah. And I don't know if there are, like, businesses around with video or whatever, but, like,
yeah, I'm sure the police will be all over looking for that if they've got it. Well, and there's a lot of just street cameras in yeah. that area. So mm-hmm. they may have been able to pick up that truck, if not right there, farther back.
Right.
You know.
Or further like, ahead.
Further like, back or further ahead. Yeah, either way. Just to, you know, figure out who it was. And
this is wow. the same road that we witnessed that hit and run.
Yeah.
That was just a couple blocks
that back. That road is...
It's Fury like Road.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Fury Road.
It
now.
Is Fury Road.
Gravoy right. is a lawless land.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's kind of the karma for people in St. Louis calling it Gravoy.
Yeah. That's what it is. When it's
actually, when it's actually Gravois.
Yeah. It's cursed. Yeah. yeah
it's cursed because we butchered the name of the road. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah. It's haunted by
the French.
The ghosts of, yeah, all the French settlers. Just like Juniata.
Or Spady.
Spady. What are other good ones?
Let's see. Oh, there was a number of them. I'm just blanking on them now. There was a meme going around for a while. I posted a meme about a week or so ago, and it's the lady yelling at the cat meme, and the lady's yelling crayon. And the cat's saying yeah, crayon.
Right.
And a friend of mine posts like, yeah, Somebody from St. Louis really doesn't have a leg to stand on this conversation.
I tried to look up to see.
Yeah.
Gravois.
There's Gravois. Yeah, Gravois is the big one. Yeah, because we just
Chow Toe. Chow Toe is supposed to be Shuto. I don't know.
Shoto.
Shoto.
We call it Shoto. Chateau.
It's all these French words.
It's the French ones. Well, and then Spady, which is German, and should be like Spöde.
Spöde.
Or if we had Anna here, she would be able to confirm.
Yeah. And then, like, it must have been Wednesday when they called me and they informed me that the cobalt is totaled.
That sucks.
It was really sad. They gave me $4,000 for it, though.
Wow. That's kind of cool.
It was actually, the valuation was higher, but they took out $500 for the deductible for the boat that I hit.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm still liable for that. Until
if they ever catch the person who did it, then they'll go after them for that money and you'll get it back.
Yeah.
But
I'm not terribly worried about it. But yeah, they made $4,000, which I was shocked.
Yeah.
That. Like if I had tried to sell that.
That was a nice nice chunk of change towards your new vehicle.
Yeah, it helped a lot.
That's a pretty new car. It's very pretty.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. I was saying earlier that this is the first time I've gotten to like drive it.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, is it mean.
Nice. Like, little two-door, looks really sleek.
Yeah. John said it looks like a spaceship. It kind of does.
Yeah, it does. It's very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So a lot has happened.
Oh my God.
Since we have recorded last. Archon.
Archon happened.
Made a shit ton of money for the Breast Cancer Research Foundation.
Yeah, we did.
$4,120, which was then tripled.
Wow.
Through they were doing a triple matching, which normally, like, I've only seen them do a triple match one other time, but I wasn't able to get in on it for the Sausage Fest donation. This time, getting down to the last 2 days, they're like, we're doing a triple match. It was like, holy shit. Normally there's a simple match, which is just, it just doubles whatever you donate. This one tripled it. So the effective donation was over 12 grand, which is just astounding to me. It means we've donated between our donations and the matching donations for Breast Cancer Research Foundation, we're over 40 at this point.
Yeah. That's crazy.
It is. It really is. But it's also really cool. Also, I got a really cool trophy, Sausage Fest award.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was. It was very cool. But yeah. So Sausage Fest was strange. Our Archon was strange and weird as it always is, and Sausage Fest went well. So
it was a weird Archon.
I can't think of an Archon that hasn't been weird in like the last 5 years.
They're all weird in their very special ways.
And like it's like a rotating crew. Like the people change every year. There are people that are like, oh, they'll always be here. Then they aren't there anymore. people show up and then aren't there for a year or two and then come back. So and then like we make new friends and meet new people. We've got people that are that I met this year that one of them wants to help me get like booze donations from distributors and things like that.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still need to contact her. We have a group of young guys who come in and help out.
Yep.
We gonna talk about that?
No, we're good. Yeah, good. Did you know that soulard means drunkard in French?
Are you fucking kidding
me? That's what this article says.
That tracks.
Yeah.
No, it totally tracks.
Let me see. Heavy drinker.
That's amazing. that is amazing.
I like how they just put it out there.
Yeah. It's like, well, I mean, did the neighborhood name come before or after the brewery? I wonder. That would be something
breweries.
Interesting.
There's multiple breweries right. down there.
Well, that's true. Lemp, and then Lemp was there. I think Lemp was there first, and then the AB brewery. And like that brewery has been there for a really long time. I worked there for like 6 or 8 months at one point, because and this was in the 90s. They had an office that did all their tracking of the beer, and is everything all right over there?
Yeah, no, I just have a more interesting fact.
They did the tracking of the beer, and it was their traffic office. It was like, we brew certain beers at the St. Louis brewery, and mm-hmm. they have the Tampa brewery, and so there's breweries all over the states, and they each brew different beers. So, like, we'll get shipments from the Tampa brewery, we'll hold them in St. Louis, and we'll package the St. Louis beer with the Tampa beer, and it gets shipped off to a distributor, who then gets it out to bars or grocery stores or whatever. This office managed all the truck traffic in and out of the St. Louis brewery. Kind of a big deal. Well, in the mid-90s, mid to early to mid-90s, they went through, they automated it. They got mm-hmm. a computer system that was going to take care of it. It was all going to be automated. Well, they had this group of like 6 to 8 people who worked in this office, longtime employees, and they're like, we don't want to just cut them loose. So what they did was they hired a bunch of temps to work in that office so that these people could slowly get assimilated out into other jobs. Mm-hmm. So that they can interview for other jobs within the company and get them moved out. Really cool thing that, like, you don't see a lot of big corporations yeah. doing stuff like that. They'll just cut the office, you know. They right. just cut the whole group. They didn't do that. That's not how they worked back then. So I was hired in that temp position. At the time, I was making, like, $10 or $12 an hour.
Hot dog.
Which was, like, that was, like, rich white people money.
Yeah.
Like, I was used to making, like, $4 an hour, $5 yeah. an hour at the time. So this was like huge. We also knew it was for a very short time. We knew that, like, they even told us, this is the day that you will no longer work here.
That's good.
And sure enough, that's what it was. And it was like, yeah. So, like, during that last month, it was like, all right, you need to start really looking for another job. Mm-hmm. And I got something. I was out of work for like a week.
Yeah.
You know, it was one of those things. But I learned that the warehouse they have is actually, it's under the main brewery. So the warehouse is underground. There are tunnels at the back of the warehouse that are a rail line that run out to the river.
Mm-hmm.
So what they would do is they'd put the beer on rail cars and like steam engine it out to the river to get on barges. And that's how they did their distribution back in the day.
Wow.
So you said you had another fact?
Oh, because I looked up Soulard
yeah.
to see what the etymology of the name is. And it's actually named for a person whose last name was Soulard, which is more funny to me.
That's fantastic.
Because...
And change our name.
Yeah. I didn't know that was... it's a whole new possibility for me.
I shouldn't... You know what?
It's hilarious.
Change my name on my Archon badge. Tony Soulard.
It's hilarious that it was named for a person. It means drunk, like a drunk, and then it is what it is now.
Yeah, where it's a neighborhood, but it's right next to the brewery. Like, it's right next to the Anheuser-Busch Brewery in St. Louis.
And it is known as the place that you go.
And it is the second largest Mardi Gras outside of New Orleans.
Yeah.
I think in North America. I think mm-hmm. it's not just in the United States. I think it's in North America.
Yeah, there's like a... Soulard hosts the St. Louis Mardi Gras Festival, which sometimes attracts hundreds of thousands of revelers.
Yeah.
It has been said that St. Louis hosts the second largest Mardi Gras party in the country. I'm going to go ahead and say that it means North America, because can you think of... It's right. Mexico and Canada, so
yeah,
like,
where else? I would imagine it is North America. I think the competition...
They would have to have like a high concentration of French settlers. So Canada, possibly, but it's too cold up there.
Well, they don't do anything. Also Catholic.
Oh.
Because Mardi Gras...
Is Canada mostly Protestant, or...
I don't know.
I have no
idea. It was mostly moose.
Oh, yeah, you're right. And they're godless heathens. So.
Damn moose.
Damn moose.
Yeah, because Mardi Gras is literally Fat Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Are we going to talk about this movie?
Oh, my God, are we? All right, Tony, what's your high level?
Well, first, this movie is called The Lobster.
The Lobster.
Starring Colin Farrell and Rachel Weisz.
Oh, yeah, that's who that dude was.
Yeah. Colin Farrell with a very dad bod and 70s porn stash.
I dug it.
My high-level overview is that I was about halfway through the movie, and then there was some really disturbing imagery. Really disturbing imagery.
What part?
The dog.
Oh, yeah.
The rabbits.
Yep. Yeah.
Like the animals. Like, I didn't give a shit that people were getting killed. Yeah, but like that, yeah, the animals bothered me. Before that, I was mostly confused about what the fuck was going on. I stayed confused about what the fuck was going on till about, I would say, the hour and a half mark. Then it started to, like, an idea started to gel in my head exactly what this was about. Like, in vague terms. I think the only way I would solidify that is going back and watching it again a time or two. But I don't feel like I want to do that. I don't think that's going to be in the cards for me. I think it was very deliberately made to be what it is. I don't think what we saw was a mistake.
I agree with that.
I didn't like it, but I can respect what was going on because of what I think the message it was trying to get across. So what's your... That was a very long, high-level review.
I don't think I like this movie. And yeah. I don't know that it... I was trying to latch on to anything. Like, what is going to be the message? Like, what's the deep insight about, like, human connection or, like, interpersonal relationships? Or I never got there.
But very definitely there was something about relationships.
I was on board. I was like, okay, we're in this dystopian future, like... Or present, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And this thing is happening. Maybe they're not going to tell us why. I'm okay with that. But, like, we're in this hotel, and then we switch gears, like, halfway through it. And I'm like, I got confused. So, like, now we're not in the hotel. We're out in the wilderness. Oh, he's going to be, like, it's going to be, they're going to be free. They're, like, a resistance. No, that's not the fucking case. They're just another, like.
It's just another. It's almost like it's
just another regime.
Like, part of the...
Yeah.
It's all part of the same system.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so my interpretation of what I was watching, because there were things that they did, they definitely told us. Then there were things that I feel like were kind of implied. So they definitely told us that you show up at the hotel. If you're single, you show up at the hotel. If you're chosen... You stay there for 45 days. Within 45 days, you find a partner. You spend so many days in a single room. Then you spend so many days in a couple's room. But you're all still interacting with other people, like at meal times. There's some weird thing where you're going off hunting other people with a tranquilizer gun. Then if you continue to succeed, then you get put just the two of you on a boat. With no other interaction. And if you manage to survive that without a problem, you're free to go and you have a new partner for life. If you have a problem and if you can't quit arguing, you are assigned a child, which the focus shifts to the child. So sometimes that most often means that you're not going to fight anymore. Which I thought was fucking hilarious.
Oh my god, I was horrified. They're like, and if you guys can't stop fighting, you will be assigned a child, and that should help, probably. I was like,
there was some really great dialogue that was delivered so emotionless.
Yeah, very deadpan.
There was a huge lack of emotion in anything that was going on.
Yeah, that's like the underwriting theme in this entire movie is just like how little emotion people are.
How little emotion, I think thematically what I got from it was how little emotion people have just in general in choosing their relationships. And also it's the most inane things that cause people to match.
Yeah.
Because that's what it was. And it's like we both get nosebleeds. Now we're gonna be a match.
Mm-hmm.
That means we're gonna match.
Yeah, their defining characteristic.
It's yeah.
The dude with the lisp. The one dude is that he's nearsighted. Like
yeah,
that was interesting because even when they're out in the wilderness, he meets this woman and finds out she's nearsighted. They're both nearsighted.
Yeah. Ooh, so you're nearsighted also.
So then, like, they have this weird social interaction where this other dude brings her rabbits. Nobody's allowed to flirt out in the wilderness because they're loners.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to have intimate relationships with each other. It literally is just another cog in this machine. They're not free out there. No. So I don't know why they would choose that. You ran away from this other, I don't even know what you want to call it.
Yeah. Social test? Because, oh, we didn't get to that point. Oh, yeah. If you don't have a match after 45 days, mm-hmm. you get turned into an animal. And you either get set free as that animal, or you get assigned back to your family.
Yeah.
For them to take care of you. And you're just an animal now.
Yeah. See, there was like, there are all these things I was excited for them to explore, like what it means to be alone, why that is like damaging to us as human beings, like mm-hmm. why we need this interconnectedness. Like, they could have gone into the hedgehog's dilemma. Like, they keep touching on it with these weird, what do you want to call it, these weird like plays that they're doing where they're like, here is you alone. And they have this man sitting at a table. The man starts choking. The man dies because there's nobody there to help him. Mm-hmm. Here is you with a woman. Same table, same man with a woman. He's choking. Now the woman saves him.
Yeah.
Like all these morality plays mm-hmm. almost. So it's like.
It's. And see, and I think that's what it's about. Yeah. I think it's that here is the conditioning that you're going to get as society that you have. Here is why it's better to be part of a couple mm-hmm. than to not.
Yeah.
Also, they establish very early on that you can only be heterosexual or homosexual when you go into the – you can't
– yeah,
like,
that's right.
Oh, they're like, oh, are you heterosexual or homosexual? He goes, well, I had a wife, but like there was this thing that I did with a guy. So I guess maybe bisexual. Yeah, sorry. We can't do that anymore because of the problems that it caused.
Yeah, they're like, that program was canceled last spring because it wasn't, like, it just wasn't working or whatever, which was,
so yeah. then he takes, like 5 seconds, 5 to 10 seconds where he's just, like, thinking. And it's a really long time.
Where he's really, like, considering. Because she asks him, do you want to be heterosexual or homosexual? Yeah. And then he's like, no, I guess I ought to be heterosexual.
Right. So, like, there's so many good little things like that where they're, I think they're really showing, you know, here's the societal pressures of being with someone. And also, it seems to be this situation where it's like, okay, up to a certain age, you are alone. Mm-hmm. Then up to a certain age, you are dating? Because that's kind of what it is. It's kind of like, here's where you're dating. And now, here's where we literally throw you into the water, onto a boat. And isolate you so it's just the two of you. Mm. And if you survive all that, by the time you hit 45, I think it's very deliberate, the span of weeks, span of days.
That they're giving.
I think that might correlate to like ages. Mm-hmm. So if by 45 you don't have anybody, you're just an animal. You don't exist anymore.
Yeah. There's also a really good theme about, so as they're spending time there, they're getting like more desperate.
Mm, yeah.
Getting more desperate to find a mate. You know, you're getting less selective. And there's this, two of the men that we're following in the beginning do this thing where they decide they're going to emulate things that they think potential partners that they've got their eye on want. The one dude starts faking his nosebleeds.
Yeah. Banging his face against things.
The main guy that we're following, David?
I honestly, the names were escaping me. Okay.
He starts to pretend he's a sociopath.
Yeah.
To get with that one girl who is like the head
hunter. The actual sociopath.
Yeah, who is a literal sociopath. Who ends up kicking his dog to death. To get him to prove that he's a sociopath. Like, he literally changes his entire personality just so he can... And what does he say? It's better to fake feelings when you don't have them than it is to try to hide feelings that you do have. Not better, like, morally, but, like, easier.
One of his buddies asked him flat out, should I fake this? What's worse? To fake this and be with a person who maybe I shouldn't be matched with, or get turned into an animal.
Yeah, get turned into an animal, be hunted and killed by other bigger animals.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And when, like, you put it like
there's no option there.
Yeah.
Like, why would you ever choose to be turned into an animal?
Yeah, when you put it like that. Yeah, of course. Of course you're going to fake some nosebleeds.
And the whole sex was very weird in this. this, like, their the whole nature of sexuality. Mm. Like, John C. Reilly.
Poor John C. Reilly.
Was like, yeah, you can't masturbate. It's like, we've caught you.
Yeah, masturbating is not allowed in this
yeah.
resort. I don't know what to call it because I don't know. I don't completely understand its
it was
place
a
in
program.
This. Yeah.
Like, they very specifically said.
But I don't know. It can't be voluntary. I think it's compulsory.
I think so.
Because even when they go out to the city, like, they're pulling people's
paperwork. Yeah.
For the, to see if they're married.
Right.
To see if they're coupled.
They're partnered.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So Reilly is caught masturbating, and then at breakfast, they burn his hand in a toaster, which I thought was like a, what's the word? I don't know, sort of an archaic sort of punishment for, like, the system that they have. You would think that they would have very specifically, like, or maybe they meant for it to be public.
Yeah, and they talk about, like, later on, they talk about some of the punishments, too. And some of them are, like, extremely
Those
cruel.
Punishments are out in the wild.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it's, because there's a whole different system out. When you become a loner, that means, that must mean that you've escaped and you don't want to be coupled with somebody. So you right. end up out in the wilderness being hunted by people. So they have their own system of rules.
Which is...
Since you're a loner, you are not allowed to be intimate with other people. It's this very sterile, like, in juxtaposition to the fact that they're literally living in the woods. Mm-hmm. Like, there's very little comfort, like, very little anything. They're not allowed to have romantic or sexual relationships with each other. Who is the only person enforcing this is one woman.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, though, that the, like, I think in society that corresponds to people who actively spurn marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
I'm not going to go along with your societal pressures to get married, to be coupled with someone. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be single. And then there's an aggressive pressure against people who choose to be single, but then couple later.
Yeah.
Like it's a betrayal.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't want to be part of that system. Your only choice instead of being forced to couple is now you have to stay alone. If you couple now, then why the fuck did you leave in the first place?
Right.
It's
like you're
like
betraying
this,
us. Right. Like, yeah.
You're betraying the idea of being a loner.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you're selling out, man.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so they go out to the wilderness, and the expectation is that you've given up your right to any creature comforts.
Yes.
And there isn't a regime out in the wilderness doing this. Like, they are self-regulating, and it's led by this one woman who's only named Loner Leader mm-hmm. in the subtitles. Like, she doesn't get a name.
Right.
Yeah, and they have awful punishments
the
out
punishments
in the wild.
Everywhere are awful.
Yeah. The punishment for flirting is the red kiss, where they slash the lips of the two people and make them kiss.
Yeah.
And then they allude, I was dreading, they did this on purpose.
Yeah.
Because the narrator, who is a character you don't even meet until like 3/4 of the way through the movie, mm-hmm. is a woman, and she starts talking about red intercourse. She doesn't go into it, but she's just like, I'm terrified of that.
Yeah.
And you can, like,
just
it doesn't
knowing
take
what,
much.
Just knowing what the red kiss is. Yeah, I don't even really want to think about what red intercourse is.
Right.
Because they do describe the red kiss.
Yeah.
And you see somebody walking around with just bandages over their mouth and, like, yeah. bled through bandages over their mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, the interactions he had with people when he was still on the compound, mm-hmm. the hotel, like, women would come up to him and just offer, like, the most aggressive. It's like, yeah, I'll come to your room and give you a blowjob.
There's really just that one woman.
And yeah, well, then there's the woman on the bus.
No, it's the same woman.
Is that the same woman?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she was like this really yeah. desperate character who...
Yeah, you can fuck my ass if you want. And if, you know what, though? If I don't find somebody, I'm just going to jump out of the window.
Yeah, I'm going to kill
myself.
But
I'm on the first floor. Like...
yeah, very casually talking about these really intense subjects. And that's, like we said, that's like the theme
everything,
of the movie is
yeah.
everything is deadpan. Like, yeah.
And there was some really intense stuff. Like, when she jumps out of the building and she's bleeding out on the pavement and just screaming her head off. He walks up and he has a conversation with the psychopath woman. Mm. And
who also doesn't have a name. She's labeled the emotionless woman.
Yeah.
In the subtitles.
Yeah.
Just putting it lightly.
It's like, oh, yeah. I hope she dies quick because I'm on the first floor. That'd be a real shame if I have to hear somebody slowly dying.
But he's putting that on as an act.
Yeah.
For this woman. Like, he takes this persona of a sociopath because he's desperate to get matched with someone.
Because mm-hmm. if he doesn't, he'll be a lobster.
But they never really show... The only person who really shows desperation is that one woman. But she doesn't show it, like, in an emotional way. She literally just says, if I don't find a partner, I'm going to kill myself. And then she does... that thing. Like, but she says it in such a casual way.
It's all very matter of fact.
Yeah. It's like, oh, guess it's time to start faking nosebleeds.
Well, yeah. And I mean, it was just like the way she offered him sex.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a very matter of fact. There wasn't anything sensual about it. It wasn't suggestive. It wasn't flirtative. It was just, hey, here's my room number. You can come over later and I'll give you a blowjob, or you can fuck me in the ass if you want. And it's like, I mean,
yeah,
it
she was
said like
what
just
did she
that
say?
Way.
She said you could, or I don't mind it up the ass. Something about her husband. Her husband liked it, and then she's like, I don't want to talk about him though. Like, and it's all just like, very matter of fact. Like, oddly, even though people are showing desperation by changing their personalities outwardly, everybody's acting very nonchalant. Like,
yes.
Nobody really seems to feel that pressured to get matched up. Like, that one blonde girl, she ends up turned into a pony.
Mm-hmm.
Why? I'm thinking, like, how is it that anybody ever gets turned into an animal? Because couldn't you just be like, hey, you, I'm not digging you, but I don't want to be a fucking lobster.
Right.
And I know you don't want to be, like, a spider monkey, so...
Well, and so then there's the, like, toward the end, when he comes back, when the group of them comes back, and then they set up these moral dilemmas for people. Basically, like, hey, this person who you're coupling with is not a good person. They're not the person you should be with.
Yeah, they're not your match.
They go talk to the old dude and the hotel manager.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, so which one of you should we kill? Which one of you is going to be better off alone? Oh, yeah, I'm totally going to be better off alone. I'm alone all the time while she's off working. I'm fine. I could totally be fine being alone. It's fine. And she's tied up and, like, freaking out because...
Yeah, because he's throwing her under the bus.
Yeah. And, like, they give him the opportunity to kill her.
Mm-hmm.
But the gun doesn't have bullets.
Yeah, yeah.
So the idea is then what happens?
Yeah, so they put them in
the situation. Then they just peace out. Then they just leave. They're like, all right, well, you guys can.
Yeah, because they did the damage.
Yeah.
That woman will never not know that her husband shot her.
Yeah.
Like, he chose that.
Yeah.
And that, but then it's like, they're like, oh, we have this thing planned for this weekend. So I'm like, oh, it's a revolution. Like, here we go. We're getting started. It is not that at all. They just go in to fuck with these people at this resort and then leave.
Those people are homewreckers. They're carrying through their conscious decision to not marry, to avoid the construct of marriage, and then actively sowing the seeds that will break up couples.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he does it with the nosebleed dude. Where he's like, yeah, he doesn't know. He forces the nosebleeds. I bet that's ketchup on his shirt.
Mm.
And the daughter that they're assigned is like, you need to kill him. Like
that one scene when they have been coupled. Those two people, the nosebleeds, have been coupled. He's been coupled with the sociopath. They meet on the path. They're like walking out somewhere, and they're like, yeah, we've been assigned a child. So they introduce the child, and he just kicks her. The dude, he's like, you go give David a kiss. And the little girl walks over to David, and he's like, the last thing I want is a kiss from a silly little girl. And then he kicks her. And it's like, it's so weird.
Yeah.
Nobody freaks out. Everyone's just kind of like.
Mm. Well, and I think that is the casual disregard that a couple that doesn't have children
mm-hmm.
shows for couples that do have children. I, like, yeah. there are societal
They're a little microcosms.
They are.
In this movie. Yeah, you're right.
Like, so there's really a lot there to unpack. Mm-hmm. But man, the delivery makes it really hard to watch.
Yeah.
But it also kind of forces you to pay attention to it. Because there's no grand emotional release or even expression. And then the violence to animals was something that was just, that was difficult.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things that the more you think about it, the animals aren't really animals. The animals are the older generation that we aren't, that are invisible.
Yeah.
Except for, you know, you still care for them. Like, he still cared for his dog. He still cared for his brother that was the dog.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't acknowledge him quite as his brother. He's just this pet.
Yeah.
And then there's the other animals that are just running around in the wilderness.
Maybe I need to, like, I feel like somewhere there is a really good breakdown of, like, everything this movie's trying to pull apart. But it's just something about it when I was watching it where I was just like,
I can see this movie, like, getting, like, a college film review class and just picking this thing apart. Because there is a lot there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of there there.
There is a lot of there there. And I guess I'm not saying that there needed to be, like, a revolution or something, but that is a, like, the sort of thing where you're like, okay, he's escaped to the wilderness, so then we're going to get to see the other side of this.
Yeah.
Like, and that is not the case. It's all part of the system.
Yep.
Like, they do things that are, like, against the law, but really they're just another regime.
Yeah. Which is, it's interesting. I mean, if you take that comparison back to our society, you have people that think they're outside of the system, mm-hmm. but they still have to operate within a set of rules for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And you're still operating within society. You can't, unless you're going to go live completely off the grid, live in a, you know, Branch Davidian compound or something like that. You're still in society. Even as you reject the society and actively avoid being a part of it, you're still in it.
Right.
And you still have to have rules that make sense for your microcosm, to borrow your word. Yeah. Again,
the only person with a real name is David, Colin Farrell.
Huh.
Short-sighted woman is the woman he falls in love with. Loner leader is the redhead. Maid, limping man.
Yeah.
Okay, so the other two dudes have names, but they're referred to as limping man, who is John, and lisping man, who is Robert.
Yeah,
John C. Reilly.
That does make sense because I do seem to remember them having names.
There's Heartless Woman, Nosebleed Woman, Hotel Manager, Biscuit Woman is the one who tries to kill herself. Loner Swimmer, Doctor, and Hotel Guard.
So when I searched on Netflix for this movie,
mm-hmm.
you know how Netflix does this thing where it will pick a scene or a trailer and just show you, like, live, it'll, like, as you scroll over, it'll just start playing a trailer.
Which is super annoying to me.
Yeah.
Because it used to just do that with, like, the select ones at the top, mm-hmm. where it was like, this is, you know, this is what we want to
promote.
Yeah. And I was totally fine with that.
The new season of Big Mouth is out.
Yeah.
And for a week, you'll have the Big Mouth banner up at mm-hmm. the top.
That was fine. Because then I could just scroll through and I don't have to watch it anymore. Now everything does it. It's so obnoxious.
Yeah. So I search for this
mm-hmm.
and this banner pops up. It plays that scene. Like, after the woman has jumped out of the building, and it's playing the scene where the two of them are just having this conversation, where it's just such a matter-of-fact interplay of, oh, God, I wish she'd hurry up and die. It's really annoying. And it was like, just watching that completely out of context, it was like, what kind of weird, fucked up, interesting discussion is this? You know, it was like, it's like, this is a real, completely out of context, it felt like there's this weird, dark comedy, Wes Anderson thing going on. No, it wasn't quite that.
I mean, because people do that, right? Like, they modify themselves to be what they think another person wants them to be.
Yes. Especially in dating.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
When you're dating someone, you don't see the person. You see the presentation that the person is giving you.
Mm-hmm.
When you see someone's Facebook page, you don't see, like, all of their shit, unless they're the kind of person who legitimately does want the attention, the negative attention of, here's all the terrible things that happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are putting on a good face. It's like a job interview.
Yeah.
You don't go in and say, yeah, I'm a terrible employee. I will show up 5 minutes late to work every day, guaranteed.
But it's showing like, those are true in a lot of aspects of life, like you said, but it's especially insidious in dating because like you get into this relationship with somebody who becomes attracted to these qualities that you think, that they think you are displaying that aren't really you. You can't keep that up forever. And you're not doing it in, you're likely not doing it intentionally to mislead people. Mm-hmm. It's just something that we do as humans. Like we want to be loved and accepted. So you get into this relationship built on these things, which aren't true. And then we see how relationships disintegrate. And that happens in like much quicker succession in the movie and to usually less violent ends.
Right. Usually.
But yeah, that's what, like all of these little things in this movie are metaphors. I don't even know if metaphors is the right word for these different aspects of human interaction and human intimacy.
Yeah. No, I'm completely with you on that. Yeah. It's like, I had a friend who, this was like right about the time I met Julie. She was on AOL and we were AOL had the chat rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was some St. Louis chat rooms. Well, the St. Louis chat rooms had some regulars and that's actually how I met Julie. I met her in the St. Louis chat room.
Mm-hmm.
But, this other friend of ours, Teresa, she had been recently divorced and she said she had gone out on some dates with some dudes and there was this one guy and I knew of him. This guy was probably all of about 5'6",
mm-hmm.
not the most attractive guy. And apparently he was really fucking weird. Like he would, like I was talking to her and she's like, I agreed to meet him for dinner and online he's telling me he's 6 foot tall. It's like,
how long do you think you can?
Right. Yeah. Right. And it's like, you know, putting forth an image of yourself that is a more attractive version of you
mm-hmm.
is kind of expected.
Yeah.
But don't give facts that are verifiable to be completely false.
With empirical, like,
yeah.
evidence that you can test empirically.
It's like, bro. I'm 5'6" and I'm looking you right in the eye.
Right.
And she's like, that's not how tall he was.
That doesn't
matter. And so she's like, yeah, so I went to dinner with this dude. And I was like, what else? Like, and her thing was like, yeah, I mean, he offered to take me to dinner. So I'm like, I'll still go to dinner with you to see if, you know, there's a personality. Because maybe the personality really does match. She's like, but I can tell you, I'm not going to believe anything you say because you lied about something that I can just check.
Yeah.
I can just look at you and see. It's like...
Yeah, there's a difference between wanting to put your best self forward and then just straight up lying.
Yeah. Like, if you would go online and say, I'm blonde.
Right. I'm really attracted to blondes, you know? So, like, I attract somebody who is attracted to blondes and you show up. I'm not blonde.
No, that blue.
And you can see
that blue
it.
Is not really blonde.
Yeah, and you can see it. Like I can't fool you.
Yeah, like because if you're gonna lie about something like that,
mm-hmm.
how can I trust literally anything else that you tell me about yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Like I can see that you have already lied about something as part of our first interactions before we even meet.
And then it becomes like the self-fulfilling prophecy. Oh, she didn't like me because I wasn't tall enough.
Right.
Well, that's not fair. You didn't give her a chance.
You're right.
To like not care.
Well, it's also like the incels who are like, yeah, it's just false advertising when a woman wears a push-up bra.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Or makeup.
Or makeup, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? Dude, come on.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, that's interesting because like,
no, it's just...
There are things everybody does.
Yeah.
Like, literally the only way... Like, everybody wears clothes that they feel are flattering to them. Everybody does their hair in a certain way. Like, literally the only way that every single person could be, like, could fit those standards, you know,
mm-hmm.
is to just be naked. And right. to never groom.
Yeah.
Be naked and never groom.
Yep.
Then we'll see how beautiful you really are.
Well, I mean, and guys can do the same things.
Yeah, they can.
Like I'll never forget when we were talking about Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes.
And you were like, he had the facial hair and it makes his face look slimmer. And I was like, yeah.
Yeah, he was contouring.
I with do. His, yeah. With I his, do the same thing.
He was contour. I was like, it blew my mind when I realized that you could contour your face with a beard.
Yeah. Yeah. George Lucas looks like he has a chin because he wears a beard. Because otherwise his chin just goes straight down to his chest.
You can give yourself a jawline.
You can.
With the beard.
You absolutely can. And you can actually change the shape of it depending on if you let your hair like grow down your neck or if you can contour it along different lines through here. I've done it. Like I've literally done it just because like just playing around sometimes because I slip and I need to then straighten it out.
And you should.
But like, you absolutely can. I can change the apparent shape of my face by how I shave the hair on my cheeks.
Yeah.
And I just think it's hilarious that I can do that. Yeah. You know, it's like it's not like I'm trying to fool anybody.
Yeah,
it's just
nothing
like
to fool.
But for me, it's like I like the look of that in the mirror better than a round face. I like the it looks like it has more definition of my face. I feel better about myself.
Yeah.
No different than a woman wearing makeup because she feels better about herself. I've told Julie, she's like, oh, come on, we got to go. I can't. I need to do my makeup. And it's like, you look great. I need to do my makeup. It's like, all right.
Yeah.
I think you look great as you are. I think you look great with makeup. However you feel best about yourself,
yeah, there's you do just that. Something about like, you know, you have it on and you just feel different. You just feel different in the right clothes. You just feel different in like a really nice pair of shoes. Like you feel different. You act different. Like
it's... I relate it to like when I was playing hockey for a while. It's like when I wore my hockey jersey, like I can't be stopped.
Yeah.
Like it just made me feel like I got this because I was in goal. I was a goalie and it was just like, you're not getting past this. Not when I'm wearing this. I got this. You're not going to pass me, you know? And that's just how I felt. I can totally see why someone wearing a certain hairstyle or putting on makeup or wearing a push-up bra or wearing a slimming underwear, men and women, you know, wearing a certain style of pants that just make you feel like you look better. And maybe no one else will know the difference, but you feel that way. So that's all that matters.
Yeah.
As opposed to someone who's really lying about it.
Right.
Which was just, it was kind of interesting because it, like, all those people who were modifying themselves to match someone else, that's all the same thing. Some of it is like...
It wasn't stuff that was sustainable.
Right.
Like, you can't sustain a lack of empathy.
Mm-hmm.
Because when the person you're matched with kicks your dog to death, you're going to start crying in the bathroom and they're going to figure you out.
Yes. The question is are you giving that other person enough credit to not just see you as someone who has this shared trait?
Yeah.
Like the nosebleed guy.
Yeah.
Because once she found out that he didn't have nosebleeds, she was like, now what? Like, especially like in the moments right after. Like, because the daughter's like, oh, we need to kill him.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, no. Because at that point, I think that was another example of, okay, so he's not an exact match for me, but we're still together.
Yeah.
And it's okay.
It was like this movie took these parts of human interaction that we deal with all the time that we are super casual about, turned up the volume on them, made them a lot more violent, a lot more, and then like gave us the mirror by how everybody was acting. So like he breaks onto the boat, they're having dinner, and he's like, he doesn't actually get nosebleeds, like blah 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 blah. The woman slaps him, which is a violent act, but nobody's really fazed by it. They don't raise their voices. He continues talking, like he finishes his sentence after she slaps him. So it's like all these, like everything is dialed up, but except for them, like they're just casually going about it.
Which
so
is,
I wonder if that's like,
it's interesting though, if you look at it, because like anytime there's those moments of violence that they lash out, it's almost like those are the microaggressions that we live with every day. Mm-hmm. Like where he's like, oh, go give him a hug. Yeah. I don't like kids. I'm not.
Yeah.
It was very over the top. It was an aggressive statement and he aggressively kicked the child.
Yeah.
That's not how it would happen for us.
Yeah, people like, don't actually literally kick your kid.
They're going to be like, no, that's okay. She doesn't need, I would prefer if she doesn't hug me. Mm-hmm. But to a child, that statement could be taken as an aggression.
Yeah.
And it would be like being kicked in the shin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think there's.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like all these things that are actually a part of our culture, and they just ramp it up like by a lot and make it very obvious. But then they don't change the way people react.
Right.
They're not changing like their emotional states. It's like this foil for how we casually just accept these parts of like how we interact.
Yeah, I think after seeing the movie and after having this discussion, I think there is real value in going back and watching it.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I would necessarily want to.
Yeah, I'm not going to.
I'm not going to, at least no time soon. But I can see at some point going back and watching the film, knowing what I know now, going into it consciously, knowing that these themes are there. And I think the movie plays a whole lot differently.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm more okay with the violence. I'm more okay with the cold delivery.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more okay even with the things that are happening to animals because they've already established those aren't animals.
Yeah, they're humans.
They're humans.
The part that was hard for me to look at was the dog.
Yes.
Being dead and bloodied.
And then then the rabbits. Those rabbits on the ground. That was not comfortable to watch. Yeah. That's why. So that I texted you when you were like, oh, I'm going to watch the movie. And I was like, if you make it through the movie, we can talk about it.
Yeah.
Because I honestly wasn't sure how you were going to react to that. I know some people that would have seen that dead dog and would have driven over here and punched me in the face for letting them watch a movie where a dog was.
I keep forgetting to look at does the dog die?
Does the dog die? Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure this movie is all over that fucking website.
I don't want to say I'm okay with it, but like I can watch it like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. The part that was hard for me to watch.
I actually thought you were better. You would be better than some other people that have said at this table.
The part that was really, really hard for me to watch is the very end.
Where he's
in the bathroom with the steak knife.
Oh, yeah.
Getting ready to blind himself.
Yep.
So let's talk about the ending to this movie. Because for all of the meat that is the rest of it, for lack of whatever, I was underwhelmed with the
ending. It just kind of laid there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They escape to this diner, this couple who had met out in the wilderness, because you can't, as much as people would like to deny. Okay, so here's the, I'm percolating. Like,
all right.
Like,
so while you do that, let me just say, I did kind of like how when they were going through their courtship, they explained how they came up with all these little signals, this little inside stuff that means, oh, yeah, we're in danger if I move my hand this way. If I put my hand behind the back, it means let's go fuck.
Yeah, if I put my hand in a fist behind my back, it means let's fuck.
But at the same time, when people are developed, people develop that shorthand with each other. They just know that when, you know, you say a certain thing, you know that, hey, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
or hey, can we leave? Because this party is really boring. Can I say something to you because we have been together for a while so that you and I know what's going on? Nobody else has to be aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can communicate without involving everyone else in our communication. So I liked that.
I was sort of thinking of this as like little vignettes. But if I think about it, it's like this. So he goes through the start. He just came out of a relationship. He's trying to, this is how they start new relationships.
Mm-hmm.
He tries to be something he's not, gets his heart broken, essentially. Then his decision from this heartbreak, the heartbreak being that this crazy person kills his brother dog.
Yeah.
Which is hard to deal with when somebody kills your brother dog.
I don't know if I could take it.
Yeah, I don't know.
I would probably shoot it with a trank gun too.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, and turn her into whatever mystery animal he turned her into.
Yeah.
which is terrifying to me.
I wonder if she was the pig.
I don't know. She did say one of the punishments was that he would be turned into an animal, the animal that nobody wants to be, but they never say it.
Yeah.
I don't think being a pig would be that bad.
No, because the pig could sniff out truffles.
Yeah. Pigs are smart.
They are.
So it's like this whole...
bacon.
He comes to a point where his decision after this heartbreak is he's taking himself out of the game.
Yeah.
Which is a reaction people have.
Oh, yeah.
I've been through it where I'm like... This hurts, and I'm never again.
Yeah.
Never. I'm going to be alone forever. All I need is me. That's all I need. I don't need to be with another person. I don't want to be hugged or, like, touched or anything like that. So he goes to the wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, it's sort of like this life finds a way sort of deal, where they're out in the wilderness. They're not allowed to have intimate relationships with each other, but they can't help it.
Yeah.
Because that's human nature. You can't help it.
Like, literally, I had just broken up with someone, ran into Julie online. Mm-hmm. We were chatting. She gave me her phone number, and I'm like, all right, and didn't call her because my head was not in that space at all.
Yeah.
Ran into her online a couple days later. She's like, hey, you never called. It's like, oh, I can call now. And that was Thursday night. We talked like literally all night,
mm-hmm.
like all night Friday night. And Saturday we hung out together. Like, I went to her house just thinking we were hanging out. She's like, she famously will tell people, yeah, he didn't even realize it was a date.
Wow.
You know, it's like, cause I wasn't there. I was mm-hmm. like, I would no, yeah. no, I'm not down for any of this
yeah,
anymore.
I'm not doing this anymore. Yeah. Right. People do that shit all the time.
Yep. And that's when it presented itself back to me without even me being conscious of it.
Yeah. So then they fall in real, real love.
Yeah.
But they don't know how to handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the system that they have been living in is so weird. You can only assume that whatever marriage he was in before, he was coupled in a similar way.
He was coupled and they found someone else.
Yeah.
His wife fell
out of love with him.
Yep. Not only fell out of love, but wasn't the implication that she was moving or she had someone else?
Oh, I don't remember. I just remember she was like, his wife didn't love him.
Yeah, and you need to go now.
Yeah, and he showed up at this place. But like, even, it's not like this true love sort of thing.
Right.
Because they're like, they love each other. They're attracted to each other. They're attracted to each other so much that they're going to go against the social mores that is being a loner.
Yeah.
But they don't love each other so much that when she gets blinded... She says, why didn't you blind him? So her punishment for going into this relationship with another loner is the leader takes her to the city, convinces her she's getting LASIK, which she doesn't want to do because she doesn't want to lose her nearsightedness because that's the trait that she shares with her dude. But instead of getting LASIK, she gets blinded. So then she's like, why didn't you blind him? So, like, there's still
because society punishes women.
Well, yeah, but also, like, it's her throwing him under the bus.
Yeah.
So, like, they have this quote-unquote true love, but it's, like, still, like, a self-preserving,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is real. That's, like...
Oh, yeah.
To, like, this thought that, like... And the dude does it. The married dude.
Yes, he does.
The hotel manager. He shoots... Well, he was going to shoot his wife.
Well, he threw her under the bus before he even had the gun.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, oh, no, I'll be fine.
I can live.
Yeah.
How much do you love her at a scale of 1 to 15, which was weird?
14.
14.
That's a high number.
Yeah. But then immediately, when it comes down to, like, you or her, it's self-preserving.
Yep.
Time.
Yep.
It's very, like, because when they're out in the wilderness being loners, like mm-hmm. I said, they're... It's all about lacking creature comfort and about being, I don't know if I want to call it nihilistic, but sort of like everyone has to dig their own grave.
They're also, they will self-deny and self-flagellate.
Mm-hmm.
Like they will on purpose deny themselves those comforts that they know they can have, they know are within their rights, but they're making martyrs of themselves also.
Yeah.
In doing it. And then the punishments are all self-inflicted. Nothing says that they have to be punished, but they all follow this like coda of if you do this, then you will be punished, and here's how we punish.
Yeah.
But there's no body of enforcement. It's just like this loose grouping of people who are going to, oh, you're part of us now, so you have to follow the rules. Here's the rules. It's like, but why? Nobody asks why.
Right.
It's just everyone just kind of goes along with it.
Yeah. Nobody asks why. Why aren't we allowed to fall in love out in the wilderness?
Why 45 days? Why the 2 weeks? Why the kids? I mean, they do explain the kids. I still think that's hilarious.
That's like pulled directly from life.
Oh, yeah.
Like people who are like, oh, our marriage is in trouble. Let's have a kid. Mm-hmm. A baby will fix this. Fuck. I was just like, oh, no.
A baby never fixes it.
It doesn't fix it. It
doesn't fix it.
But it's funny because they don't implement it like it's not a baby. They give them a full-grown child.
That is funny. Yeah.
And they almost don't know what to do. Like
how they're on that fucking boat and they're all dressed alike.
And he's talking about the weight of basketballs. That's the conversation we enter into this family on this boat. Did you know that a basketball is between 380 grams and... No, I didn't know that.
Oh, well then did you know?
Do you know how much a volleyball weighs? No, but I would love to find out. It's like, I wonder what that was giving us a peek into. Like,
oh, I can tell you.
Oh.
I can tell you because it happens at this table. It's happened with Julie and I.
Mm-hmm.
It's, oh, you didn't know this random fact about Star Wars? Let me tell you.
But I feel like that's different because that's interesting. That's like a fact about your personality.
Wait.
Mm-hmm.
But is it interesting?
But it's about you. Because, like, when you're talking about Star Wars, you're talking about Tony.
Yeah.
Like, you're seeing into who Tony is. They're just sitting around a table talking about the weight of sports balls in grams.
Yeah.
None of them give a fuck about that. It's like they don't understand how to interact with each other. And why should they?
Mm-hmm. But I think the way the movie is structured, though,
mm-hmm.
and the... Both the way they blow thing, they overblow everything and also run everything through a filter.
Mm-hmm.
I think it still tracks that this is that same kind of conversation where someone is super passionate about something to the point where they're talking about minute details that only a person who's really interested in that thing cares about. But everybody else is like, hey, that's your thing. And it's, I want to hear about it because you are excited about it and it's your thing. Whether that be your day at work, whether that be an anime, an obscure movie, a romance novel. It's like, that's not my thing, but I'm going to listen to you talk about your thing because you want to share it. And that's kind of the feeling I got from that. And it was bizarre because it was like the fucking, you're right, the fucking weight of sports balls in grams. It's like, yeah, that's really weird. And who in their right fucking mind knows that? But that's not the point. The point is that they do and they want to share it.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to listen because you want to share.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what I got from it, at least.
Mm-hmm. I didn't get that because when he was talking, I didn't feel like he gave a fuck either. It felt like he was reading from a script. Like,
but do any of them ever sound like they give a fuck?
Yeah, but that's what it was like. Nobody ever gives a fuck about anything.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody talks about anything that they're actually passionate about. Like, even when he gets in the pool with that girl, they start talking about different strokes of swimming.
Yeah.
And it's so mechanical, like, mm-hmm. they're not talking about anything.
No. It's like people who,
Know how to interact with each other.
How about that weather?
Yeah.
How about that sport game that's on the TV now?
Mm-hmm. I know the point is they don't explain why we're in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
Why do people need to be taught the importance of human connection again? Why do people need to be taught the importance of human connection by people who don't understand the importance of human connection? Like, it is not because you need somebody to give you the Heimlich maneuver when you're choking.
No. No, you're right.
Like, it is not because you, as a woman, you will get raped if you're walking alone, which was the very strong assertion.
That was weird.
It was so, he's just like, oh no, like humping her.
And they set back up and he's like zipping up and like, oh.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's just unsavory.
Yeah. like, it's like they're being taught the importance of human intimacy and connection from people who learned it
from a book.
Or not even a book, because I feel like if you read a textbook, maybe that would help you. But like, they learned it from watching old TV.
Yeah.
Or whatever this universe's version of that type of media, old media, like for old forgotten media that they found. And they were like, oh, I guess this is how humans work.
Yeah.
And so they're like, they're pantomiming this stuff.
You get a point there. Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
ooh. Yeah. Yeah. I would say if you have not seen the movie and you've listened to our discussion of it, I think you'll probably have a better experience watching it than somebody watching it cold.
Cold. Yeah.
Like, I feel this movie carries more with it on a subsequent viewing, or at least if you know going into it what you're watching.
What to try to pull from it.
Yeah. Because I am positive, because of the fact that I didn't really feel like I knew what was going on until I was 3/4 of the way through it, I probably missed a lot early on.
Yeah, because if I sit and think about it the way I'm thinking about it now, which is that the whole thing is like a... What is the word I'm thinking of? I don't think it's metaphor.
Metaphor works.
I guess kind of. A metaphor for different problems with human intimacy. Instead, I was looking for a story.
Right.
There isn't really a storyline.
No. People do things.
Yeah.
And things are different at the end than they were at the beginning. But only in the vaguest of terms is that defined as a plot.
And nothing is different in the world.
No.
Things are slightly different for the main character.
Right.
But not in like a not in a really eye-opening way.
No.
Like, you don't get a sense of catharsis from the way it ends. It's not like, in the end, true love won out and he learned something about himself. You don't get the feeling that he learned something about
himself.
No. Because even at the end, when he is about to blind himself, like, I think that's the biggest clue that he hasn't changed. Like, nothing big has changed within him. Because his reaction, their reaction is, she is blind now. We are coupled. We have decided to be coupled. Like, we made that decision, so they're the rebels.
Right.
We chose this love, but they're still going about it within the system's terms, which is that your defining characteristic is that you're blind. I have to blind myself.
Right.
Which doesn't make sense.
But that doesn't help either of you.
Right. Yeah, that is going to hinder both of you.
Right. So I guess there could be commentary about how you can let someone else define how you're going to interact with the world because of how they interact with it.
Mm-hmm.
My spouse is a drunk, so I will drink to you know, be part of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, I'm bringing us both down.
Yeah.
Like, you could make a connection there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the other way you could really get value out of the movie is literally as a script analysis for a class, you know?
Yeah. I would love to pull up and read some analysis of this movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know that I want to watch it again, but I would love to like sink my teeth into somebody.
Somebody who's really put some in-depth work into picking through some of the scenes and some of the themes. Yep.
Okay. I changed my opinion. I didn't like watching the movie, but I do like talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird how there's some movies that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot of there.
Yeah.
And it makes for a good discussion.
Yeah.
This would be an interesting movie to watch with, like, just as I'm just now thinking of like a social experiment of watching this and asking people of different points in their relationship what they think of the movie.
Mm.
You know, like, people who are on their first date, people who've been dating for a while, people who are engaged, people who are married with kids, people whose kids are moved out of the house,
people who are recently divorced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to get their take on some of it.
People who just broke up. People who, yeah, yeah.
I think that would be kind of a fun social experiment.
Because when you think about it in those terms, they pack a lot into this movie.
Yeah. And I think it would be interesting getting those people into a room to discuss it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, have the people who are recently divorced, recently broken up, maybe even recently widowed,
mm-hmm.
along with people who are on their first date, who some people who maybe have not dated and are consciously not dating, mm-hmm. you know, because either...
Yeah, people with cynical outlooks on relationships.
Yeah.
Because that bugs me. It bugs me, the people who have cynical outlooks on relationships, because there's definitely like a sense of judgment, like, oh, why do, you know, it's so stupid, like, why do people need, you know, need this, like, well, you're not really you're not even trying to understand, like, just being a human being.
Well, and I think the same thing happens too with people who have relationships that fall outside of the, you know, the heterosexual, cisgendered,
heteronormative,
monogamous relationships. Mm-hmm. Like, and you see it both ways. I mean, don't get me wrong.
No, yeah.
The people who are heteronormative, monogamous, look at a polyamorous couple and they're like, what the fuck's happening there?
Mm-hmm. But there's absolutely the other,
they do it right back around, yeah, where it's like, absolutely... oh, you're so weird just having one person.
And that's what drives me crazy, is like, when, you know, it sucks when people who are like hyper monogamous, heteronormative, can't understand like other relationship styles, and that can be super toxic. But there's definitely toxicity coming from, I don't know what you want to call it, like other divergent relationshiping styles.
Yeah.
They're like, there's a large portion of polyamorous who claim that jealousy is a useless emotion. Like, I don't understand jealousy. Like, and it's just like, if you don't understand it and you're saying it and you're writing it off, you're going to have problems, because mm-hmm. it is a human emotion. And if you just, it's just like any other emotion, just like anger, just like sadness, just like joy. Mm-hmm. Like, if you try to suppress it and just ignore it, you're going to, well, maybe not joy. Joy might be like one of the, if you try to, well, I don't know who actively tries to suppress joy, but if you try to suppress anger, mm-hmm. it's going to do bad things. If you try to suppress your sadness, it's going to do bad things. If you try to suppress your jealousy, if you don't even try to meet it, it's going to do bad things.
Well, I think not only that, but in the case of somebody who says, you know, who is so dismissive of the concept of jealousy, maybe that person doesn't tend to feel jealousy. But if you were involved with someone who does, that dismissive nature is super toxic.
Yeah, it's very unhelpful.
And it's, yeah, it doesn't help the person you are with.
But also, because I don't think there's anybody who doesn't feel jealousy. So then if you're the type of person who has built your personality on the fact that you don't understand jealousy, when you come across your own feelings of jealousy, you're going to go into denial, and you're also going to not know how to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to hurt people instead of just dealing with it in a healthy way.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you see that all the time in polyamory.
You see that all the time in a lot of relationships.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the jealousy is one of those things that's just insidious.
Yeah. But it's saying something to you. It's what you do with what your body is telling you, mm-hmm. that is the key.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to fly off the handle when you feel jealous. You don't have to stalk your partner. Like,
no, but you can go to your partner and say, hey,
yeah,
the way you looked at that person made me feel uncomfortable.
Or if it's a conversation like that, that's when, but, or you could just be like, hey, this is how I'm feeling. What it usually means is I'm lacking security in this moment for whatever reason.
Yeah.
It could be for no reason, but I'm still feeling it. So I need some reassurance. Mm-hmm. I need, what it's saying is I need something. And you just need to communicate. You need to be able to communicate that.
Yeah. I was going to say, in most of the time, what people need in that case is communication.
Yeah.
We need to, look, there's a disconnect right now because of how I'm feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Let's pull this back in. Let's talk through this. And maybe all it's going to take is word from you just to tell me, you know, tell me I'm pretty and you like the shape of my butt.
Yeah.
And then we're all good.
I need some reassurance
right
now.
Right. Yeah.
And that doesn't make you less of a person. Like, so here's the other thing, is how much we've derided like insecurity,
mm-hmm.
as a culture, even though everything we do as a culture is like based on making people insecure about themselves and like But if you are caught being insecure, that is like, oh, like that's an awful trait to have.
Which is really funny considering this kind of circles back to around to what we were saying earlier about doing things to make yourself feel better.
Yeah.
I mean, because that's only insecurity. If you're doing something to make yourself feel better.
Yeah.
It's because you have.
You think about it the other way. It's not to mask security. It's to give yourself. It's not to mask insecurity. It's to give yourself security.
Right.
So if you think of it like that, like I'm doing these things, myself.
I'm doing these things because I have an insecurity and I will feel better if I wear this eyeshadow.
Yeah.
Or if I cut my hair this way.
Yeah.
Or wear this special t-shirt or, you know, put on my lucky socks and or whatever
made,
it
we've
is.
We've made insecurity like such a dirty thing.
Yes.
And that's why a lot of people find jealousy hard to deal with. Mm-hmm. I guess historically, the way we have dealt with jealousy has been bad. Like, you probably shouldn't kill your spouse.
No.
Because you're feeling jealous.
That's.
You probably shouldn't kill your spouse if you find them in bed with another person. Mm-hmm. Probably.
I mean, maybe it depends on who the other person is.
Yeah, I guess so. So, like, there is that. To be like, oh, you're so insecure, you violently harmed somebody. Like, jealousy and insecurity have done, no. People have done bad things because of their jealousy and insecurity.
Yes.
But they themselves, not to use this, it's not the gun that kills people analogy, but that's what it is. Like, jealousy isn't what killed a person.
No.
That person's reaction because we haven't given people the tools to be able to handle these emotions because we're still new. We're still just babbies.
Like, yeah.
You know, we're really just getting, maybe this is getting like too universe brain. Like, we're really just getting to a place where it's like, as a civilization, we're not spending all of our time trying to produce and feed ourselves, where we can like really stop and think about how like these other things that weren't important before. You know what I mean? Like,
it's, I think that's why certain generations look at the next generation who exist. And I mean, this is like every generation, almost every generation ever, the previous generation, the subsequent generation has some new technology. And that technology could come in the form of actual technology, or it could come in the form of a method of doing things that makes life easier. Mm-hmm. It makes it easier to plow the fields. It makes it easier to hunt. It makes it easier to gather food. It makes it easier to build a house. It makes it easier to communicate across great distances.
It makes it easier to keep food, so you're not always like actively.
It makes it easier to defend yourself or to fight war.
Yeah.
Which arguably not the best use of technology, but at the same time, you gain an efficiency that means less of your people die, that you give more security to the people back home.
Yeah.
Because the next generation has it easier. The previous generation's like, why do you need that? Why do you need to talk about your feelings more?
Right.
We didn't need to talk about our feelings because we were working 14 hours a day out in the field. We didn't have to worry about that stuff. You only have to work 13 and a half hours out in the field.
Right.
You got it so easy. What did you know?
Yeah. Oh, you're so soft.
Right.
Yeah. We're gaining more and more free time to be able to really delve into this stuff.
But the thing is every, like that's just a progression through history. That's nothing new.
From the dawn of time. It's like, I feel like it's speeding up.
It is.
Because of how technology is going. Like it's been going, but yeah, you're right. That's how it's always been.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, we really can only look at it, for the most part, we can really only look at it in terms of our context within our life, because we're also ego machines. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are the most important person in our lives, for the most part, for most people.
Yeah.
Some people don't have that mindset for whatever reason, but pretty universally, we are the hero of our own story, and our view of reality is the one that matters the most to us. Be that looking at people in the next generation after us, looking at the generation before us. I mean, that's where I think a lot of the conflict comes in, the multi-generational continual fighting. This isn't new.
Right.
You know, it was the hippies and the you know, the police, and now it's the boomers and the Gen Z and whatever.
That's why I think like sort of social progression has been so slow until recently. And I say recently in like a broader sort of, because as like we were talking about, as technology rapidly increases, we're just getting more time to sit down and actually analyze. And I don't know how to, I feel like there should be a term for it. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, when you can, you know, in minutes have food delivered to you, you don't have to leave the comfort of your home. You can jump on your laptop and have in-depth communication with people across the globe, not only one-on-one, but your words can go out to many people. The depth of analysis that you can get into in the time you have available, that you're not gathering water to wash your clothes, you're not having to dig holes to go to the bathroom to keep animals from... You don't have to prepare your food so that it doesn't spoil.
Right.
Your kill doesn't spoil.
Yep.
You don't have to go harvest the fields so that you'll have food for the winter. No. We live in an incredibly efficient time, which just gives us more time to think. Yeah. And more time to consider these things that people just didn't have time for before.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting, the things that aren't just intrinsic to us, like studying art, like art history. It was really fascinating to me taking an art history class specifically, because it's like we weren't created, or we didn't spring forth with the ability to photorealistically reproduce images.
Correct.
Like art as a body of knowledge had to accumulate itself over generations and generations. You can look at back at like the Greeks and the Romans, and they'll talk about things like they didn't understand how to like translate space, or like 3D space, so everything is like to its side, or
and then
like somebody realizes, oh, this is how you translate this onto paper. And then it, like, we had to accumulate this knowledge, so then now here we are in the present where like we as humans cannot, like, or some of us have, not me, have the ability to create like just crazy realistic renderings of images. Whereas if you were born 20,000 years ago, I don't even know how long we've been around, sorry everyone,
like, it's only been like 5,000 years.
You wouldn't have been able to teach yourself that. It's only been 2,000. Or 6,000? Is that the... I think 6,000.
I don't remember. Exactly. It's something like that.
Like, you wouldn't have been able to learn how to do that.
But can you draw the Earth flat as it's supposed to be?
Oh, yeah.
Perfect.
Of course.
Sorry for interrupting.
No, it was just, like, you wouldn't have been able back then, even if you're like, I really love art and I really, like, this is something I really want to learn to do, you couldn't have gotten to the level that we can get at today, just because that knowledge hadn't been accumulated.
Yeah.
I don't know how we got started talking about this, but human beings be wild, man.
Yeah. I think I'm done talking about this movie.
Yeah.
I didn't care for the experience of watching the movie. I don't think it's a bad movie. I think it's got a message that it's trying to get across. Even if I don't fully understand it, it's there. And the effort that was put into it is clear. It's a very internally consistent movie, from what I can see, from what I saw. The consistent lack of emotion in interactions was very deliberate. And it worked to get forth the story they were trying to tell without people resorting to with an overblown sense of panic or passion, or, you know, any of those things that emotions can give you on an elevated scale. It just kind of muted all the emotions down to just a monotone, which I think actually works better for the analysis. So you're not fighting with the emotional portrayal while you're trying to analyze the words that they're saying and the...
Yeah, I feel really strongly that it's also that's also a stylistic choice. Because like I said, I feel like they really amped up the actions and the violence of it. Not just the physical violence, but like they everything.
Were, yeah, they were incredibly cruel at times.
Yeah, just like... And like everything is exaggerated, like very exaggerated.
Yeah.
And then what's dialed back is their reactions, their emotions, the way they communicate. So like I feel like that itself is a portrayal of how we operate. Like we just casually go about our lives with these violent things happening between us. And it's not literally that your girlfriend kicks your dog to death. It's whatever.
It's a like, betrayal.
Yeah. Whatever lower level. There are a lot of things lower than kicking your brother dog to death.
Yeah. Well.
There's steps to get to there. You know, we just casually accept. Yeah. I feel like that was very intentional.
Mm-hmm.
They're out in the wilderness. Everybody just casually accepts this violence that they are inflicting on each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because at no point does anybody get passionate.
No. No. For any reason.
Yeah.
Not for love, for even their sex.
Like, oh, that was so weird.
That weird sitting on the lap and rubbing her butt on his crotch thing that they did. It was like, what is happening here? What am I watching?
I don't know. And then when they got coupled, she did the same thing.
Yeah, that. I know. That, yeah.
Like they didn't know. Like, all right, this is foreplay.
I wonder if that's what it is. I wonder if it's just the teasing.
It was very
ritual.
Like,
it was like it's like a ritualistic teasing that you go through when you're dating someone.
Yeah.
Like,
well, to me, it seemed very animalistic. Like it was a mating. I don't want to say dance. But, like, that's what it was. And ritualistic was the word I was thinking. Where it was just, like, ritualistic. Like, oh, this is what you do to get turned on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they don't even understand foreplay.
Right, right.
They know that if you rub your butt on a dude's crotch, he'll get hard, hopefully.
But then what he's, like, because then, like, the first maid does it. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, could you just keep going?
Mm-hmm.
It's like...
And he's like, just awful.
Yeah.
Awful.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah. Talking about it was better than watching the movie.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anything else?
No.
Right. So next week, if all goes well, we're going to be doing T-Hanksgiving.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Do we have plans for a movie for that?
Not yet. I'll look for something. Something that Mr. T-Hanks is involved in, and we'll... Maybe we'll do something fun, something light, something that you can have a few drinks while watching or talking about. This is definitely not that movie.
Oh, no.
This is so very different than whatever that's going to be.
This is heavy. It was heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Next week, we will do something for T-Hanksgiving.
All right. Good night.
Good night. Bye, bye, bye. See you. Bye, 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 bye.